When the devil is too busy and death's a bit too much, they call on me by name, you see, for my special touch. To the gentlemen, I'm misfortune. To the ladies, I'm surprise. But call me by any name, anyway, it's all the same. I'm the fly in your suit. I'm the pedal in your shoe. I'm the key beneath your bed. I'm the bump on every head. I'm the heel on which you slip. I'm the pin in every hip. I'm the thorn in your side. Makes you wiggle and ride. And it's so easy when you're evil. This is the life you see. The devil tips his hat to me. I do it all because I'm evil. And I do it all for free.
Welcome, one and all, once again to Nerds on the Rocks, episode 146. This week we have a very special episode, as always, but before we get there, let's introduce our villainous gamers and plotters of the world. First up, we have Justin.
Hi.
I'm not really sure that's an introduction.
Howdy, y'all. Welcome to Woody's Roundup.
There you go. So you went from the Jack's Pizza operator to a white cowboy. Well, I guess technically if you say cowboy, people assume their occupation anyway.
Yeah.
But
racist.
Have you seen many Jack Cowboys?
Let's introduce our next guest.
Okay, we have Trent.
Me and Ryan both pretty much facepalmed as soon as we heard that.
That we have Trent.
Hi, welcome from Canada. Maple syrup, bacon, pancakes, Mounties, hockey. No.
Do you folks have black cowboys?
As a fellow Canadian, I saw yesterday, so we need to make this happen quick.
Actually,
we have to go watch more.
Actually, we totally have cowboys. Yeah.
Alberta.
Well, yeah, in Sussex. We have them in the province. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, we have cowboys. We've probably had them as long as you guys have.
Okay. And in the background with Trent, you could hear, he can introduce himself since he has a very special title.
My name is Ryan J. Boyce, Esquire. It's just how it goes. I'm also from the land of Canada, of hockey and maple syrup and poutine and all wonderful things Canadian.
Oh, that's how it's pronounced. I always thought it's pronounced poutine.
Poutine.
No, it's poutine.
Okay.
Have you ever had poutine?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay.
Good. We are concerned. Yeah.
Is it good?
Actually, no. Heart attack, not averted.
I've actually been to Canada several times. It's not something I put on my resume, though. But
oh, God, why?
Why not?
I used to have family up in Toronto. Oh, technically, I still have family in Toronto. Just
I would put that on my resume. I do put that on my resume.
Well, that would help because if they're looking for a job in Canada, they probably wouldn't know.
Under skills and interests on my resume, it says, visits Canada frequently.
That's not an interest either.
It could be an interest. He has to travel. If in Canada, it would be a bit more showy. But
like taking up a penny on the floor and it's been covered in gum.
I don't know what you mean, Justin.
I don't get that either. But move it odd.
It's okay. You have a weird education system down there, so I'm just going to let that slide.
Hey,
I'm from the same educational system, and I didn't get the reference either, so. But yes, this week's podcast is a holdover from September because you couldn't get the group together for that. But it's a Villains Month podcast. If you read comics, you know that in the month of September, DC themed all their books around villains. They were centered around most of their core villains in Justice League, Batman, Secret Six, a ton of titles with really terrible numbering schemes. But I figured it would be a great opportunity to sit down and talk about villains because, you know, the old expression, a hero is only as good as his villains. And we have had some tremendous villains across all forms of entertainment. So, you know, I just wanted to open the floor up to that. And I guess this is actually something fitting you that we discussed last week. What do you define a villain as?
The more like Skeletor they are, the better.
One way of putting it. I guess the villain is pretty much the same thing as an antagonist. So Like, if providing someone is working against the goals of whoever is considered to be the main character, they should be considered the villain.
Well, I mean, but what if you have the villain as the center of the story, then?
That happens occasionally. For instance, in Silent Hill 4, The Room, the story technically is centered around Walter Sullivan, who's a serial killer. He's also the primary antagonist of the video game. But you still see things through the eyes of an avatar who is either good or neutral, depending on how you play. So even if the story is around the villain, generally speaking, you're able to distinguish based on how they act, whether they're virtuous or malicious.
Okay, and what if it's like villain versus villain then? Like, how do you determine who is in the right in that scenario?
Whoever's
the villain.
In the eye of the beholder, really. I mean, whoever is the villain is really just a matter of viewpoint a lot of the time. I mean, sure, it might be the viewpoint of more than one person that the person's the villain, but I'm sure to the villain, he's not the villain. He's just fighting for his own goals.
The hero.
Yeah.
He'd probably be the person with the highest body count.
That would be the hero or the villain.
Yeah, that's a good question. Because if you watch Judge Dredd, for instance, I'm pretty sure Judge Dredd has the highest body count, but he is the hero.
Yes. And the same thing I would assume with the Punisher.
Which is very typical of the late 80s, early 90s, the anti-hero.
I do like the anti-hero.
Yeah, and we had this, and this is why I was talking about acid. We had the discussion about the anti-villain, which is a villain who has nefarious goals, but doesn't necessarily...
Respect the fact that that is a term that exists in the English language.
And the TV tropes
I'm still calling BS on that.
I mean, it makes sense from a logical standpoint, is that if you can have a hero who doesn't do things by the books, you can have a villain who does things by the books, but doesn't have the best interest of people in his or her endgame.
See, when you say villain who does things by the books, I just think of a pissed off banker.
Well,
I think of a bureaucrat.
This will have spoilers, but I think this is the example we used in the show finish, so it makes more sense now. But like Walter White on Breaking Bad, I think would kind of be considered an anti-villain at times.
Yeah, no spoilers,
yeah, no
please.
Spoilers,
we only just started watching.
No.
Oh, okay, so we won't talk about Walter White then on Breaking Bad.
Go ahead.
Nope, let's not.
But, okay, it's also safe, I would say, of like Japanese anime where you usually kind of have that, who's like, he has an agenda against the main hero, but he's not necessarily on the side of evil.
Like a bully.
Would you say Sasuke from Naruto? Would that count?
I don't watch enough anime, but I just know, like, okay, the better example, the one I'm more familiar with, is usually Power Rangers. There's usually a bad guy who has beef with usually the Red Ranger, because the Red Ranger is the leader of the Power Rangers, but he's not necessarily working with the villains. He just has this personal vendetta that he wants to solve. And sometimes he partners up with the other villain to achieve that, but he is a noble warrior who won't, yeah, I think Power Rangers Super Samurai did this recently, where like, he won't fight you if you're down. He won't fight you, you know, he won't attack you if you're weak or stuff like that, because he has some sense of morality to him, but he is still evil at heart. Okay, there we go. So I guess, you know, opening up, you know, what are some of your favorite villains, I guess, or some of the more notable ones, and what makes a good villain versus a bad villain? And I don't mean like a bad, like, yeah, he's really evil, but like a villain you just don't care about.
Unlikable villain, or one just—it's man. You don't care what happens to.
Yeah, I mean, technically you probably shouldn't. Cause most of the time, you want them to get their comeuppance, but you can kind of. How do I say it? You want them to get their comeuppance, but at the same time, you do care about what happens to them. Where there are some villains where you're like, oh, whatever, can this guy just go away already? Okay. Well, while you folks think on that, I will say one of the things that has always drawn me to certain villains is I think you have to believe in what you're doing. A lot of the times, if you have a villain that's just kind of, you know, like people who just, oh, I want money, that's very never a great motivation. But if it's like, I want to create chaos, I want to create a new world order, I want to, you know, create the genetically superior man, like those motivations, as far out there as they can be, make sense because they are driven by a singular purpose instead of just like this, oh, I'm evil, so I'm going to do bad things.
That reminds me a lot of Dr. Doom, actually. He's evil. He seems to be evil to a lot of people, but he's fighting for what he believes is actually the right thing to do. Like, yeah, to the point, he actually got a basket. The Egyptian god, look at him. He actually cut him, and he asked, so, hey, I want to destroy the world, but it's because I truly believe what is right. And she had to give in to him because it was just actually what he felt. It was the only way to actually save the world. It was basically him becoming a shuts in. I don't see these others.
Yeah, I think Dr. Doom's is an interesting one, especially sometimes, because he does have his own nation, and sometimes the things he does is to protect their sovereignty, but it comes off as kind of heavy-handed to the rest of the world. I mean, I guess in the real world we call those dictators, but he does have the best interests of his people in mind when he's doing that stuff, and he has a place to protect to call his own. It's no different than Black Panther and Wakanda, except Black Panther plays by the rules most of the time.
Mhm.
Mhm. Mhm. What about you, Justin?
As far as a good villain?
Yeah.
Say the Monarch from Venture Brothers. I think he makes for like an interesting. He's supposed to be like a parody of a villain in some ways, but he plays it straight. But he's cliche, but he's not. Really cliche. Like, he's got a lot more depth, and they don't say why he hates Dr. Venture, but it's kind of clear in some ways. And
so, his
interactions with other villains are compelling to where, like, his beef with Phantom Limb, he makes him the lesser of the two evils, and he's so pathetic that you just can't sort of help but like him.
Yeah, I feel like Venture Brothers is an interesting one because from what I've seen, I haven't seen the entire series. It's like they're evil, but they're never supposed to be malicious.
Right. They have their own set of rules. It's like bureaucracy, basically.
Yeah.
Like, and there's certain rules about arching and like who handles what arch and family members of said arch. It's a really good show.
As any villain should, there should be a, you know, honor among thieves, as they say.
Right.
Trent?
If I could harken back to my favorite cartoon, Batman the Animated Series again, I would say that most of the villains from that show have really weak motives, except for Dr. Victor Freeze. Mostly because, like, and anyone who's seen Heart of Ice would say the same. It's like, considering what's happened to him, like, obviously you want him brought to justice because he's stirring crap up in Batman City and you like to see Batman take people to town. But on the other hand, you understand his plight. He was a real person with real emotions who was put through a trying process and lost someone really dear to him in the midst of everything and is kind of only trying to get revenge. It's a little bit more sophisticated than how it was handled in Batman and Robin, the movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
We don't talk about that.
And we're not half.
I think we're talking about it right now.
Rubber nipples. Yeah. Rubber nipples.
And without the ice on.
Ice.
You had a Batman credit card.
Wolf killed all the dinosaurs.
The ice age.
Okay, we're done. We're done.
My point being. That was a situation where part of you was rooting for the villain because you understand what atrocities forced him to become what he is. But on the other hand, you are able to distinguish the fact that he is a villain and that he does need to be brought to justice as a result.
Okay. And I mean, kind of going a bit further with Mr. Freeze, I actually like that Heart of Ice. But what happens with that is his motivations become harder and harder to take as he appears more and more in the show. Like, he only appears, I think, 4 times in the entire series. But, like, I believe halfway through the series, the actual movie Sub-Zero, his wife is unfrozen, and then he can no longer bring himself to actually go see her because of the monster he's become. So there's this weird thing where he becomes, like, a spider head, and that was just, like,
I don't remember that. Yeah, it was at the end of Sub-Zero.
Where she becomes her again, and they actually cure her, and everybody, he's up in the North Pole evading justice, and he's just happy to see that she's alive, but he won't go see her.
Yeah, and then he comes back when they make the style switch in the new Batman Adventures, and I guess his condition took a toll, so his head exists, and it's like in the pseudo spider thing. I forget if it's the second or fourth appearance where he's also met with a more evil guy who wants to still free this technology to make himself immortal and stuff like that. And again, that's one of the villains you can't really relate to. Granted, he's a one-off because he's very just selfish. You know, he has this one agenda in mind, and beyond that, he has nothing going for him. But yeah, I think, you know, Batman, and I think comic books in general, they tend to have both good and bad villains be the same people because comics are always ongoing, they're always continuing, which is really hard to kind of have a villain get an arc, because if you have a really great villain, people want to see them come back, and the more and more they come back, the more their presence is kind of diluted. It can work for you in certain cases, like the Joker, for example, I think has become a better villain just because they need to bring him back, so they just make him really psychotic, and they just don't give him a purpose anymore. He's just around to cause harm, and he can do whatever. I do prefer them using him. Like, they do use him limited in comics. She shows up every 2 or 3 years in the comic.
Right.
But when he does show up, it's an event because it's like you don't know what this guy is going to do.
That's kind of didn't feel that way with Death of the Family, because it didn't really feel like a death so much as it did just a bunch of people having an awkward family reunion, and someone learns that they were adopted.
Well, yeah, I mean, Death of the Family has this... I think Death of the Family is a decent story. I think the conclusion kind of ruins it in hindsight, just because it's like, oh, okay, nothing really changed. Everybody's just awkward around each other now.
Yeah, like, it was a good build-up, but the ending was lacking.
That's not the fault of the Joker, though.
True.
I mean, you know, kind of switching gears, and this is something I've said about before. I also feel this is one of the reasons why, as much as I enjoy most of the Marvel movies, they haven't really exceeded that. They haven't broken that gas ceiling of excellence because they don't really have any memorable villains. The most memorable one is Loki, and he's not really a villain in the traditional sense. He's just kind of a whiny little brother who's power hungry at the end of the movie.
Right. I'd argue in the case of the Mandarin /Killen, I think is how to say his name.
Except they try to hide it behind cover for half the movie, and then he kind of comes up.
I'd say that kind of works, especially with the whole overarching theme of some superhero villains, is that, like Tony says it himself, we create our own monsters. And specifically how this one sort of, it just put everything into perspective for Tony, and how this was the first one where it didn't feel like he was dealing with his father's problems. It literally was his fault.
Yeah, but I think you could do it in and I hate to make this a Marvel vs. DC thing, but compare that to The Dark Knight, where the Joker is the result of Batman's presence in Gotham, but you don't have to have it spelled out like the Joker wouldn't exist without Batman. Okay. It's like, you know, Batman is
Tim Burton did try and make that case, though.
He did, yeah, I didn't like, in retrospect, I didn't like that, but as a kid, I thought it was a cool
movie. I think sitting in the same boat, like, you watch the original Batman motion picture when you're a kid, and you're like, this is the bomb, watch it again when you've grown up, and you're like, this is a piece of shit, like.
For the longest time, I thought it was canon. And when Batman Begins came around, and they said that Joe Chill killed his parents, I'm just like, who's Joe Chill? Where's the Joker?
Well, I thought Jack Nicholson put on a great performance as the Joker as part of it.
Jack Nicholson did indeed put on a good performance as the Joker. It still doesn't change the fact that the person blamed for the death of Batman's parents was the Joker. Which is not cool.
No, it's one of those things, and this happens especially when you have a universe that's very well known. It's where it's a small world after all, where everything's connected. Like, oh, of course the Joker killed his parents, and somehow they age apparently the same, because the Joker does not look like he's 20, 30 years older than Batman at the end of the movie.
You mean a Star Wars syndrome?
Yeah.
Anakin Skywalker built C-3PO. And he met Yoda.
Yeah, that stuff where it says like
tight with Chewbacca. Did you know these things? These things are real.
Man, they have tea every Sunday.
Oh, fuck the prequels.
But yeah, I've always hated when like everything's just really neatly connected because I don't know if any of you watch Once Upon a Time, probably not. But like, it turns out like everybody's related on that show after a while. Like, this is my grandfather, who's this guy's son, who's this guy's mother. Just stop.
Oh wait, is it like Lost, where they all just like exchange glances at one point in time, and that is it like that?
No, these people are actually related. Like, it turns out like one person's his grandfather. And,
oh my god, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's really weird. But I just facepalm. Like, in all the world, there's millions and millions of people. It's just so happening. Like, these people are really connected. And they've been connected for like 30 years. It's just really coincidental, time and time again. But yeah, I mean, we kind of touched on comic and comic book movies. What about villains from movies specifically? I mean, we mentioned Star Wars, and I'd have to imagine Darth Vader would be up there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I feel like, here's the thing. Darth Vader was a really great villain during the original trilogy, but I feel like he actually, and I know this is probably cliched by this point in nerd culture, but I honestly do feel like the prequel movies have placed kind of a black mark on his character. Because the whole concept is we were supposed to see the transition and understand the plight of Anakin as he devolves into Darth Vader. But by the end of it, you start out with this amazing badass image of Darth Vader, and you understand how fragile Anakin was and how much of a whiny jackass he was, and the fact that he killed younglings and hit his wife. I don't know, but by the end of the prequel trilogy, I just wasn't really feeling Vader anymore.
No.
Yeah, a little bit.
That moment where he said no, that happened.
did happen.
And it felt like Emperor.
It felt like a huge slide up when he went from like cutting off Mace Windu's hand to going around killing kids, especially since at that point he was going to be a father.
Did he know that then, or?
Yeah, he knew he was going to be a father.
Did he? Yes, he did know.
Yeah, so it felt kind of weird that he would just kill them and that he would like outright slaughter them when he could have just told them to hide or something, or been like, swear your allegiance to the Emperor.
Yeah. This is, I mean, and I agree. I know, like you said, it is kind of cliche, but I completely agree. It takes, this is one of the things with origins in general. It takes away the mystique of Darth Vader when you get this origin. And it's not even like a badass origin. He's just a whiny brat teenager who's really just complaining about his ex-girlfriend. Or wife, I guess.
She's his ex-wife now.
It's just like us when we were kids.
God, he takes the piss out of it. It's awful.
Yeah, it's and I, you know, like we mentioned again, going back, we mentioned the Tim Burton Batman. It's the same thing I've had issue with expanding the Joker's origin in that film. It's like you don't give the Joker an origin because then he becomes a person. You don't want him to be a person. You want him to be a force of nature. And it's the same thing with Darth Vader. Like, you don't need your evil to be explained. Evil always exists. Doesn't have to have a human origin. And it doesn't. I assume they were trying to make us feel sympathetic for the character.
Didn't work.
I'd say
no.
Part of it was casting.
Yeah. Oh boy. I wonder what happened to Jake Lloyd after that.
But I guess going back to the question, then what would you consider a good cinematic villain?
A good cinematic villain.
Whatever the opposite of Darth Vader is pre the original trilogy.
Cinematic villain? Ozymandias.
Yeah.
Ozymandias for The Watchmen, I thought.
But that's, I mean, technically that's still a comic book villain.
He was the comic book villain before he was.
No, I know, but they did put him in a movie. And they did do an extremely good job of him.
I'm always a fan of General Zod from Superman 2.
That too.
Okay. I was going to say Man of Steel, since that's my only frame of reference.
Yeah. Then there's also
Neil the Far Zod.
There's Khan. I thought that Khan was a great villain.
Which
Khan
are we talking about?
The original.
Okay.
original. Not to take too many jabs at the recent Into Darkness, which I thought was a decent movie. Not an amazing movie, but a decent movie. The original was just, it wasn't just that he was calculating and superior, which he was again as Benedict Cumberbatch, but it was the fact that the original Khan was kind of, he had a flair about him. He was kind of cinematic to his approach. I don't know. I found his character to be just as enticing as his motivation. And I feel like what defines a good villain from a bad villain is not just relatability, but also the fact that you're kind of glued to everything he does.
Yeah.
I would say
go on.
I'd say that's something that Cumberbatch was missing from, aside from a bunch of other things where we were just sort of made to feel stupid for thinking that it was Khan, then it wasn't, but then it actually was.
I don't think anybody didn't think it was Khan.
No, and that's the thing that pisses me off, though, because they say directly in the lines, it's like, your superiors played you for a fool. And then J.J. Abrams said like a billion times, oh yeah, he's not Khan. So then we're just left like, well then who is this guy? And then it turns out he's Khan. It's just like, you fucking dick. Why would you lie about something that you already knew?
And I honestly think the movie suffers for that.
No, it does. That pissed me off. I think I walked away from the movie actually a little bit pissed off at that point.
Okay. Here's the thing. I hated the fact that everyone kept asking him if it was Khan. I hated it. And while I don't stand by and I don't condone lying, I really, really fucking dislike it when people are all like, oh, reveal all the spoilers of the movie before we get to see it. It's perfect. So as much as I feel like he shouldn't have responded to those questions or those comments at all, I'd much rather walk into the movie not expecting it to be Khan and then be kind of surprised when it turned out to be Khan. And that's what happened to me. The only thing that pissed me off and made me walk away from the movie with a sour taste is, I don't know, like the whole Deus Ex Machina ending and that end, the sequence leading up to it, which made
didn't they lift that entire ending from the original Star Trek 2, by the way?
No,
I mean not the literal.
Well,
thing,
okay,
like the
whole radiation chamber thing was the same but reversed.
Yeah,
but
okay,
to be
okay.
fair,
I thought that was a good twist.
I was like sobbing in Into Darkness, pretty much just as bad as I was when I watched the original. I was like, no, it's awful. And then a couple minutes later, I was like, oh, they'll just use Khan's blood. And that's what.
Yeah. I literally said that to my friend as soon as they gave it to him. I'm like, oh, that's how they're going to save him. I'm like, and I think that was the major difference is that in Return of Khan, in the Wrath of Khan, they actually killed off Spock and he was dead. It wasn't like, oh, we killed him off. Oh, he's back in 5 minutes.
I'm sorry. I just had to get that out of my system.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think we were mentioning about a villain who has a presence and a purpose and somebody you hold on to. I think one of cinema's better villains is Hannibal, who is in Silence of the Lambs for all of, like, what, 10 minutes or something like that? But you remember him. I mean, everybody still quotes that movie, as demented as it may be.
It puts the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
And, I mean, he still creeps me out. He's an extremely demented villain. It works because he's so calm and relaxed about everything, and you really don't know his motivations in the few times you do see him.
That's another series that was destroyed by its prequels. Like,
that's why I mentioned Silence of the Lambs.
Hannibal Rising. Because if you see Hannibal Rising, it just takes the piss out of Silence of the Lambs.
Nobody saw Hannibal Rising. Not even the people who were in it saw it.
Red Dragon and the Silence of the Lambs were.
Okay, I thought Hannibal Rising was too.
I don't think so, no.
New Red Dragon.
Yeah, I feel like, and here's the thing, it's challenging revealing the backstory of villains. And you learn this, I feel like this kind of works against the reboot of A Nightmare on Elm Street, because the less we know about certain types of killers, especially supernatural killers, generally speaking, the more effective they are. In these cases where we're supposed to be afraid of what they're capable of, the less we know about them, generally, the better. You know, if we can find them to be relatable, then part of us may be rooting for them, and that's not what you want out of a villain, really.
Yeah. And then the other problem with that is, and we mentioned this with Darth Vader, is that if you try to get them sympathetic, sometimes it doesn't work. Or if you try to make them very vicious, again, that doesn't work. Like, I believe they made,
yeah.
I mean, Freddy was always kind of a pedophile, but they really just showed us in the new remake. And it's like, oh, now he's just a very creepy guy and not a really scary dude.
Well, that was actually one of the choices in the reboot that I was kind of a fan of, to be honest. I mean,
what, showing him being a...
Well, here's the thing. I didn't like this version of Freddy. I didn't like how he looked. I didn't like how he acted.
I liked his performance, though.
The movie, the original Nightmare on Elm Street, is one of my all-time favorite horror movies, to be fair.
A lot of people.
But the one thing that I did like was the fact that they clearly stated that this person was a pedophile. You know what I mean? Because the old movies never went there. They went everywhere but there, but they never went.
I know they mentioned it in Freddy vs. Jason, but that's way near the end of the series. But I swore it.
Freddy vs. Jason is part of continuity now, is it?
Is it not?
I always thought it was.
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure a new Nightmare threw everything out of continuity.
But yeah, they've always mentioned that he, you know, the town's village just burnt him down, because in the original, isn't he seeking revenge on those people who did that to him?
Yeah. Through their kids, which doesn't really make sense. But
yeah, I mean, it cripples Y outside the fact that he's a maniac. But that's kind of reason in itself when you think about it. Like, he doesn't have to, it's not as enticing motivation as revenge. It seems kind of ill-gotten that he would go out of his way to come back from the dead to kill the kids of the people who killed him, considering he did such atrocities to those kids.
I would just kill the parents.
Well, I think that'd be too easy.
but going after the kids that you molested for something that, let's face it, you kind of had coming, that also just seems like poor planning on my part. On your I mean, let's face it. Would you rather, like, kill the kids that you molested, or would you rather kill the families of the kids that you molested?
Okay, just for the record, nobody on this podcast has molested any children.
This is getting really bad.
So you can't put it on iTunes. Molest.
Where's the major explicit tag on iTunes?
But yeah, I guess on in the same vein, are there any villains who had their origins explained to you after you got to know them that you actually thought was better off for it?
Batman.
Batman is a hero. Gonna take Jason down to zero.
I'm just gonna say Kratos. Just be devil's at. Well, actually, that's a fucking lie. No,
that's a good point. Captain Planet. Captain Planet.
He's not a villain, is he?
Human tree.
I'm sorry. If you don't think Captain Planet is a villain, you're watching the show wrong.
I'm pretty sure he isn't, but you never know. You never know.
Does Prometheus cause an origin story?
Sure.
Okay, then sure that.
But I mean,
it was absolute crap. But I think that the way they kind of sort of explained the aliens was cool.
Yeah, you see, but I think this is, aliens, I could see. I don't see them as a villain because they don't really have a, I guess, a presence. They're just like forces of nature. They're monsters. I guess
I kind of see them as villains because they're terrorizing people. I guess that's how I classify those villains.
Like they're the villains in people's story, but I don't see them as kind of have. They don't have an end game. They're to kill. Like they don't. It's not like they have anything personal against these people that are on the ship. Like if there was like a.
How much of a buffer does there have to be? When Earl, when you're talking about this, how much of a buffer does there have to be between introduction and the explanation of their previous, like their origins, like.
I mean, if it's not, I would say if it's not in the thing they're introduced in, like if you had a movie and they were given an origin in the next movie, I mean, sometimes you have an origin that's kind of already explained, and then they kind of flesh it out. Like, I think Terminator Salvation kind of explained.
Okay, you're thinking of movies right here?
Well, movies, TV show. I mean, TV show.
The one I was thinking of there was Magneto. I mean, you don't exactly know what made Magneto become Magneto.
But you totally do. explained in X-Men.
No, I know. In the movies, yes, but in the comics, no.
Yeah.
That's what I was
Yeah, I was going to say the villain from Skyfall, but he totally explains to you what made him the way he is.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much his introduction. I mean, I guess in that sense, you can talk about Bond, because if you have, I mean, besides comic books, I'd have to imagine James Bond has the most colorful and exaggerant villains in entertainment.
Yeah, well, quite the race now.
At least the old Bonds. I don't really think they do colorful films anymore. I mean,
not really.
Either that's the colorful one. It's always their second in command or their dragon there.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think that's been any for Craig's films yet. I mean, Yashif didn't really have a second in command.
He was just kind of there.
I won't even talk about the Elvis impersonator in Quantum of Solace. And. Yeah, and Sylvan didn't have a second in command either. And if you go back to the Pierce Brosnan one, his second in commands were kind of stupid. You had the dude with the diamonds in his face. There was a dude with the bullet in his brain who couldn't feel pain. There was the blonde torturer in Tomorrow Never Dies. Though Xena Onatopp, high fives for her. And not just because she used sex as a weapon.
Yep.
Well, mostly because she used sex as a weapon.
But she does.
And Femme.
I mean, that's the best kind.
And Femme is extremely hot as well.
What about
What about the?
I'm not gonna lie. One of my all-time villains will always be Dr. No, because there's. You know, he doesn't have a legit foundation. You meet him and he's like, welcome to my underwater lair. Are people still alive? Am I still alive?
Is this real life?
I feel dead now.
I hear you.
No?
Yes.
Yeah. No, can you not hear us?
Yeah.
But no, Dr. Doom is a very good villain.
Does
Lashana
need to come back on?
We'll get back to Dr. Doom, because we're already off tangent. But I wanted to also... We talked about movies, we talked about comic books. What about video games? What are some memorable villains from that?
No, you go first.
I love Guilty Spark. I don't love Halo. I love the concept of Guilty Spark. Someone who is so ruthlessly dedicated to his mission that he's, like, completely malicious.
Yeah.
And so willing to kill.
I won't lie. I was so happy when I got to shoot him at the end of Halo 3. That was my favorite moments in the game. I was just like, finally, I hate this guy.
It took so many hours and so many games and so many
years. And finally, nearly 10 years... We got to do him in.
Is it? It's not 10 years between Halo 1 and 3.
Didn't Halo 1 come out in
2001, years?
Okay, my bad.
I was actually surprised. I thought Trent would have went with a Final Fantasy game first.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let's do that.
yes.
No. As much as I appreciate... Jack, he's not really a villain in any way, shape.
Well, and that's part of the reason why I like him as like the antagonist / villain. Is that?
But he is super not an antagonist.
He is.
I shoot down your answer.
He's Sin.
Nope.
He's like raping and pillaging an entire world single handedly, and he doesn't want to do it.
Nope. All right. So the problem with a lot of Final Fantasy villains, in terms of major antagonists, is that usually there's a villain or a sub-villain that you think throughout the entire game is this massive, insane villain, and then you find out in the last 15 to 20 minutes that there is a villain behind the villain, and that villain has always existed and is basically pure evil.
Final Fantasy IX.
Oh, that happens in Final Fantasy IX with Necron. It happens in Final Fantasy IV. It happens in Final Fantasy V. It happens in Final Fantasy X.
Well, you know of Yu Yevon, at least in Final Fantasy X.
Kind of. What do you know about Yu Yevon?
He's a giant space tick.
He is a fucking parasite. He's a floating parasite.
You say a giant space tick?
Yes, that's what people describe him as online, is a giant space tick. Mm-hmm. And that is
like
final ball.
Tick. Oh, like I thought you said dick.
Oh, no, tick.
That makes a little bit more sense.
My favorite villain from the Final Fantasy universe would have to be Kefka. Kefka is a character from Final Fantasy VI that you spend the majority of the game laughing at because he laughs at you. He is a clown. He burns cities, poisons rivers, and cackles the entire time. He is literally dressed as a clown. And you
He's
never,
the Joker.
Yeah, you never take him seriously. Shut up. You never take him seriously throughout the entire game, and at one point he's considered a betrayer by the Empire and imprisoned, and you think, okay, so this person is not going to be in the rest of the game. And then out of nowhere, he kills his Emperor and becomes a god. And after he becomes a god, he not only kicks your party's ass, but he succeeds in destroying the world. This is the one antagonist in Final Fantasy history that literally incited the apocalypse and succeeded.
As I said, Sephiroth did the same thing. But
he totally succeeded, though. Even though you eventually killed him. And that's the thing. He starts out as this person who only thinks he's like narcissistic at the start. But that progresses to a level of solipsism and craziness that makes him feel like everything needs to be destroyed, and it's the only way to free the world and put it out of its misery is to just kill off everything. He is the most solid backing to destroy everything of any insane Final Fantasy villain. And I highly recommend playing Final Fantasy VI if you haven't already.
Well, since you already gave us the entire plot, I mean, why wouldn't you have
it now? It's an ensemble piece with over 23 characters.
It's basically an opera.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That is only one thread of the game, my sir.
Oh.
Yeah. Suck it.
If I had to choose a video game villain, if you've ever played the Shadowheart series, there's Sir Francis Bacon. Absolutely love him as a character. He's just so much mystery behind him. You just almost never know what he's trying to do. Like, in the very opening cutscene, you cave in his skull, and all of a sudden it just regenerates back, and he smacks you like a little bitch. And that's how you know that this is going to be a good game.
That he smacks you like a little bitch.
Oh, no, you cave in his skull, it grows back, and he just laughs at you and smacks you around the entire game, just runs around and is constantly taunting you. You just can't do anything.
I would agree.
Okay. What about you, Justin?
One of my favorite video game villains is Harbinger, Mass Effect 2. I kind of like the idea that he's always there in the background and in the foreground, especially like during fights.
Really?
I actually kind of liked it when he showed up. I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate it when he showed up. Especially like at the last moment when I was about to kill somebody, and he's just like, "Surprise, I'm here."
Control.
Yeah. Here's my problem with Harbinger. As much as I understand him as a threat, because like you said, he does have a tendency to show up at the worst time between fights, and then it's really hard to get him out of the fucking room.
Right.
The problem to me with Harbinger is that we never really learn much about him. He's never really given an introduction.
Like him specifically?
Him, the character. He's never really explained in any degree of detail. And then by the end of the game, his fate is kind of, I mean, like, with all the collectors, I'm sure he's dead. But
right.
He doesn't have a conclusion. He himself does not have a conclusion.
He himself does
not have an introduction.
No, I get where that's coming from. But with me, one of the problems I have with Mass Effect 1 is that I didn't feel like Saren was there enough. Like, he just sort of showed up just sort of sporadically.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly just to, like, taunt you.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Yeah, so I felt like Harbinger was a little bit of a step up. It was a step back, but it was also a step up. And I felt like the Elusive Man was a little bit too much because, first of all, nobody thought that the Elusive Man was a good guy. And if they did, if they were, they were stupid.
I found him endearing as a character because his motivations, as racist as I'm sure they were,
I liked them.
Survival,
I mean, like,
race.
I liked them. I mean, like, let's face it. Like, I don't think anybody on their first playthrough was like, you know what, this guy's all right. I'm going to do anything he says. You're right, Elusive Man. I'm going to give you the collector base. This won't backfire on me at all.
Well, if you played the first Mass Effect game, you already know what the Cerberus organization is capable of, considering you have to kill about 500 of their minions.
I will destroy you.
Yeah, I will destroy you.
So, I guess, kind of, I didn't mention mine. I actually don't know many video game zones that stick out to me. I guess I need to play more RPGs. That seems to be where most of the villains are. I guess Wesker would be up there, because Wesker's a bit of a dick. And then he gets superpowers.
Giant dick. I'm sure viruses and stuff, everything he's injected into his body by now, has given him a giant dick, too.
I mean, he's dead now, so.
Well, for now. I mean, he's Wesker.
I was going to say, come on now. Come on.
I'd say another good villain is probably... Did anybody play Darksiders?
I have not personally.
Did play Darksiders.
I really like Semael, actually.
I kind of saw it coming. That's the only problem I really had with it.
I saw it coming, but I also like that he was upfront about it and that he was helping you, but he was also... Sorry. He was helping you, but he was also, like, hindering you in some way. And the fact that you knew it was coming just sort of, like, made you uneasy. Like, okay, we're going to get to fight this guy. I want to fight him. I guess I was just looking forward to the eventual showdown, which sadly didn't come.
Yeah.
Another video game character I really enjoy, too, if you want to consider them a villain, is actually Beatrix from Final Fantasy IX. Basically, the entire game, while she's working for the Queen, she completely destroys you every time you run into her, and everything you do just furthers her plans.
But she is the most badass
She is the best. I wish she was in your party. She's just fantastic in every way, shape, and form. Everything she does basically manipulates your party into doing whatever the hell she wants, and you don't even know it until it's too late.
Ryan has a bit of a crush.
I do have a bit of a crush. God's sake.
That's adorable. I got
adorable or terrifying.
On that same kind of theme, like, because it actually, she made me think of it. Another villain that I thought of, completely forgot about, actually, not from a video game, but Xanatos from the Gargoyles.
Oh, I forgot about
that. Doesn't he have a TV trope named after him? Doesn't he?
The Xanatos Gambit. It's basically the light from Young Justice, where if you were like the bad guy. The hero's saying that the bad guy loses, but the bad guy's just, like, all according to plan.
No, the bad guy has it set up so that no matter what the outcome is, he benefits in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
That's just thoughtful.
That's just weird. I'm sorry. Commander Riker is a fantastic villain.
Commander Riker. There are so many people from Star Trek on that show.
No, they all let their voices basically in the end.
That's what Kids Next Door was.
Yeah.
All according... Yeah. Another video game villain that I liked was Voss in Far Cry.
But he wasn't the main villain.
No, he wasn't, which kind of sucks.
See, I don't really like Far Cry. Now, I've tried getting into Far Cry 2 and Far Cry 3, but if it's not Blood Dragon, I'm not really interested.
Oh, the bad guy is so awesome in Blood Dragon.
So I was going to ask, like, we've talked comic books, we've talked movies, we've talked video games. Do you make a villain different in each type of entertainment, or is it the same characteristics?
Well, they have to want something at the expense of others. That's a pretty common interest.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's pretty much what defines them as a villain, is I want this, and I don't care what happens to other people or things for me to get this.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the defining trait of the villain.
Now, I feel like characters themselves have to be framed dependent upon their medium. Like, the long and the short is, and no slights to comic books, but when a villain starts out in a comic book, and if we look back through comic book history far enough, I'm sure we'll see this, they don't have a lot of dimension. And it's only over time and over many years and over many series that we get a lot more out of those characters. A good example would be Dr. Octopus, who kind of sucked at first, and then it flashed forward today to Superior Spider-Man. Like, it's just one of those things. Like, you don't actually understand the true depth of characters until time expands on them within that medium. In like a television show, they have to have that kind of breadth of character right away, and the same thing with movies.
Well, I mean, just kind of going back to comic books, you mentioned that, like, the Joker, for instance, was meant to be a one-off film. He was killed in his initial premiere.
Right.
And, you know, like, nowadays, he's probably one of the most stressed-out films in the world, without an actual proper origin, which works for his character. At the same time, I mean, you can have TV shows, I mean, Buffy's an example of this, where they had the big bad, where every season was literally built around the huge threat that faced them for that year. And the villain developed, and they became more sinister, more powerful as the year went on.
Mm-hmm.
There are other shows, though, that Supernatural did. They had the big bad for about, yeah, I think, the first three or four seasons with the yellow-eyed demon.
Yeah.
And then
they moved on to Crowley.
I thought Crowley was a good guy.
No, Crowley's a bad guy. Castiel's a good guy. Crowley is currently the king of hell, but he got depowered at the end of season 8.
Yeah.
He's a lovable asshole, though.
Oh,
I will say that if he's Crowley.
That's what I thought, because when I saw him, that's my last season, I watched his 5.
Oh, no.
And he was a... Because the bat... was it the angels? Like, that was, like, the... not... A guard's right-hand angel was, like, a kind of a dick feeling of that season.
Well, to be fair, most of the angels in that show were pretty much dickheads.
Yeah.
Like, literally all... Like, literally 99.9% of them.
There was only one nice angel outside of Cass, and she eventually turned on Cass.
Yeah,
kind of like, screw you.
She got set on fire by Michael.
Yeah.
Yep,
it's pretty rad.
It was kind of hilarious.
Yeah,
and I think with video games, especially, especially if it's not an RPG, it's like so little screen time is actually given to them because the story tends to focus on the main character. You don't often kind of, you know, like with movies, like there are scenes in Star Wars where you'll go see Darth Vader for like 10 minutes.
Right.
In TV shows, you'll have scenes with the villains and him interacting. With video games, it tends not. You don't often get scenes with the villains outside of them interacting with the heroes.
I feel like that's one thing that I like that movies and television have over video games is that you know that they're not just sort of like just sitting around. They're actively trying to make something happen to further their goals instead of just the heroes assuming. They're like, I've been watching Teen Wolf. So the bad guy for season 3, Duke Kalian, has been like actively does things to actively make Scott and his pack sort of drift over to his side, which I feel makes him a good villain, because while they all know that he's evil, he's also doing things that technically aren't bad, and he's only doing it to kill another villain.
Yeah,
but he's got goals. I mean,
yeah, yeah, and I mean, it's I always make, like, the Uncharted series, and this kind of happens with Indiana Jones, but Indiana Jones has it because it's a movie, it can do it. It's like, with Uncharted, I always hate the fact that you always kind of find, like, these hidden areas, and as soon as you find it, like, all the villains were hanging out there anyhow, like, oh, it's this easy to get in that you had, like, 20 people down here just hanging out with coffee? Like, with Indiana Jones, they had a similar scene in the original Raiders of the Lost Ark, where, like, the villains spot them because they're out at night and they can kind of see them in the distance, and that's how they know to get the jump on them. You don't get that in Uncharted, so it's always like, oh, the villains just randomly show up anyhow because you need a fight here. So I do think that's something video games can work on. I don't know how you can do it because I hate extended cutscenes, but they do kind of need, because I mean, like I mentioned, I think RPGs get it because RPGs have the luxury of time. But I can't really think of many memorable video game villains from, I guess, more recent games. Like, a lot of the ones we know of aren't very evil. Like, I mean, Bowser, Robotnik, Dr. Wily, evil, but they're not, like, evil.
Yeah, they're more, like, they're more cartoonishly evil.
Yeah.
I think Sephiroth is really the only, you said modern?
Yeah, and, I mean, that would...
I think... Aside from the elusive man, I think people would put Zeus from God of War.
Yeah, Zeus is a pretty good choice.
Yeah. Or, who else? Who is the bad guy in Call of Duty Black Ops 2? Maybe some people would put him up there. I don't know.
If you can't remember his name, I don't think you'd put him on
a
list.
I didn't play it for one thing.
But, I mean, I'm...
I got one. Was it Conrad in Spec Ops. I liked him. I thought it was a pretty good villain.
That can work. I can see that. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard to develop them. You have to, I mean, there are games where, and I think it's easy to develop kind of forces. Like, you have, the Flood, you have Metroids, you have Space Pirates, you have, you have the Reapers. Like, it's easy to develop because you can fight them in bulk and you see them more often. But to kind of do a singular villainous threat is really hard to do in a video game because you constantly need to be engaged in action. And you can't just be chasing one person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the other problems with telling a story about with a good villain. Again, I'm not saying that they're terrible villains; they're just not really memorable. I mentioned before. Go on.
No, say, or if you're trying, or for a lot of video games, you're trying to set up a franchise, you don't want to reuse the same plot by keeping the villain alive. So you have to try and make them as. But sometimes you have to make them memorable. You also have to make sure that people know going in that they're not going to be around to stay.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. Gears of War is another example. Everybody knows the Locus, but there's never really been a central villain in that franchise.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of hurts because...
There's always just the general.
Yeah, because it always hurts because none of the Gears of War games have great final bosses for that reason. They just make them bigger and nastier, but they don't make them memorable or anything like that. I mentioned before with comic books, I feel like the problem with comic books is that you have to continuously go back to the world of these villains who have existed for 50, 60, 70 years. After a while, like, they don't really pose much of a threat because they kind of have this gimmick that they revolve around. And the heroes have to come out. And, the villains win because we have to have events. But the villains, it's nothing's ever going to remain that way for long because you have to make sure that the status quo is there by the end of the year.
Right.
So I think for villains, movies I think would be the best because you can reuse villains with no problem. You can kill them off. You can develop them well within a franchise. We didn't mention this, but, Agent Smith from The Matrix I thought was a decent one.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't.
I'd say from... No.
And, movies created out of great villains in that one sense, but I do think a lot of them are cut from the same cloth, which is why you don't remember them. Like, a lot of action movies with the evil drug kingpin or the evil... tyrant or the terrorist or something like that. Hans Gruber is another good one.
The one who kidnapped your wife or your daughter or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but they are good and they work for that movie. I don't know of many movies that have terrible villains that are kind of put up there as great movies as far as, like, action and, stuff like that. Where you can have villains in dramas and stuff that you can even have villains in rom-coms, even though I tend to hate them, because they always just try to make either a very douchey guy or a very kingy or bossy female, and that's usually, that must mean they're evil.
Billy Zane in Titanic?
Billy Zane. he's gone to hell. He's sitting in hell like, I want that diamond. What an asshole.
I guess... What?
Go ahead.
I was going to say for, one final point, and this is something I've always been a fan of. It's like, what are some of your favorite villainous bases or hideouts?
Villainous bases or hideouts?
With the Legion of Doom...
Yeah.
That's a good one. I mean, I would never look for them under the swamp.
Yeah. No.
My personal favorite growing up was the Technodrome.
Oh, yeah.
Especially since it had that giant eye on the top, which I still don't really know what it does.
I'll say Sovereign. Which may be cheating since it actually was the villain, but hey, whatever.
He's a giant space. It counts. You could always go, say, like, the freaking Eye of Sauron, whatever the tower it was in there, or something like that. It's a little bit pretty iconic, that one.
But that wasn't really your base. Wasn't that I mean,
wasn't that actually Sora?
Not really. Well,
yeah,
not really.
Sketchy one.
It's Sauron's an interesting one because he's a villain with a presence, but he doesn't really have a presence in the movies as far as, like, a physical presence. Like, he's just something that's cast over the characters throughout the trilogy.
Yeah, it's very Cold War-ish. Like, the threat of him is always there, but you never actually see him.
Yeah.
The Cocoon.
The Cocoon.
Yeah, Venture Brothers. it's an actual giant cocoon.
I was going to say one of my personal favorites from the Bond franchise is the volcanic base that Ernst Stavro Blofeld uses in Yo-Yo Rabbit twice. Because, I mean, who wouldn't want to use a hollowed-out volcano as their secret lair? Any memorable ones from... I mean, video games tend... I mean, Wally's Castle is always a good one. Bowser's Castle is always a good one. What is Robotnik's called? A Death Egg?
Yes, I think so.
Video games do base as well because they tend to have to be really big and extravagant for the final level of the game.
Yeah. Siler's little clock base tower thing. Like his little watch shop.
Okay.
That was a good front if you're going to be a serial killer.
If you're going to be a serial killer, I don't think you should have a base. You really don't want to have a base where people can find you. You kind of want to be on the move all the time.
Considering like his moveset and what he could do, he needed a central place, and I figured if it was like a closed and rundown place, nobody would ever think to look there.
That would be the first place I'd joke.
Yeah, the Halo from Halo.
I guess that counts.
Yeah.
Floating death weapon that they're
basically. Oh, I honestly speaking, I actually don't pay attention to the story in Halo games, and I've played them all. so I always thought Halo was the actual. I thought it was the ring around the fan. I didn't know it was a weapon. Yeah, and this is somebody who's currently playing Halo 4 right now. So I don't. This is my second time going through it, and I still don't know the story of the game, so I don't really... I'm a terrible person for that.
Oh, Cortana goes crazy. That's basically what I got out of it.
Yeah, she does, but, like, the villain and stuff like that.
apparently, according to people, you had to have read the books, which I don't feel is a good excuse, but a good reason, let me say.
No, that's a discussion for another day, though. I always think that if you need outside help to understand what the person's doing in their product, then you did it wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I shouldn't have to read a comic book to get Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Avengers or anything like that.
Right.
It should be something that's explained to me in the movie I'm watching.
Right.
No, that's true. I mean, I can understand if you do, like, a little spin-off in comic form or something like that that's kind of tangential and you don't need it to know it.
But if you need to actively explain everything, then there's something wrong.
Then it's got no place doing it.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you can't give wink wink nod nods to fans, but it shouldn't be anything major.
No,
right.
You shouldn't have to build a TV show. See episode, read issue 13 to get the backstory of what happened here.
Yeah. I know we got away from this subject already, but one of the things that I didn't like. When, as far as like giving villains tragic backstories, is also don't give the villain goals and then undermine them, and make it so that the hero is technically right, or something. Because that's something. Because I'm rewatching Legend of Korra right now, and the way that they handled Amon kind of annoys me, because they invalidated his goals, and they also kind of made Korra right, in some ways.
Explain.
So basically, Amon, early on, up until like episode 12 and or 11 or 12, a monster that he could take people's bending away, and that benders were the scourge of all evil, right? So then, during the season one finale, it's revealed that he is a bender, and that's how he takes people's bending away, through bending.
So you mean kind of cheating, like, we have to make the, it's a kid's cartoon, so it makes sense, but yeah, it's kind of like, we have to make sure the hero's right.
Yeah, but they don't explain exactly why he feels that bending is the source of all evil, especially since he keeps using his bending to take away other people's bending.
Yeah, Korra season one has a lot of problems.
Yeah,
Korra season two has more problems right now for me. But
dude, never mind. We can talk about that later.
But yeah. I do think Fire Zozo was a good villain, though. Actually, I think Zuko would have... Well, I guess Zuko technically ended up being an anti-hero, but he could have been an anti-villain because he was evil for the first two seasons, but,
I'd say Azula and Ozai are good villains, and Zhao. They're perfect villains.
Yeah.
Well, not perfect, but they're great for what they are, because Ozai is always the looming threat over the series, and Azula is like his right hand man who could possibly have been more powerful than him.
Yeah, I mean, just real quick before we begin to wrap, you reminded me, cartoons, as much as I love them, I've always had an issue with them because they have to reuse villains for kids, but that makes the villains very incompetent a lot of the times. So, like growing up, people like Mumra, Cobra Commander, Shredder. Very terrible villains because they never succeeded. No matter what they did, they can only win until the episode ended, and then you have to get it back to the status quo. It's one of the things I actually enjoyed about the revamp of the Ninja Turtles and Thundercats is that they made, because they had this idea that we're going to tell a continuous story, we're going to make the villains a threat. And
Mumra was awesome in the reboot.
Yeah, you saw how the heroes got stronger by how they dealt with the villains the more and more they came up against them, and the more and more they were able to compete with them. But yeah, growing up, a lot of these kids' cartoons... No, kid cartoons. I shouldn't say kids' cartoons.
Most cartoons are
for kids. But yeah, they was like, oh, okay, so we're going to have this... and same thing with Power Rangers. Rita Repulsa, they're all dead, same thing. They'd always have to fail because you can't have more than... an episode dedicated to that to a plot line for the most part.
Or they'd always have the stupid villains who somehow manage to screw everything up at the end.
Yeah.
Even when they like are meticulous in it and they give the clearest instructions, somehow the henchman figures out a way to fuck it up.
Yeah. Or like the power just dies at the very end, or they forgot to pay their electric bill or something.
We're preparing the epic death beam, and then next thing you know, it's like, who forgot to pay the power bill?
Yeah.
That actually reminded me of something. About Korra, one of the things, it sort of stretches the credibility of the Equalists when the kids can beat them very easily.
Yeah.
Because, like within episode 2, everyone's just like, oh god, they're going to take our bending away. And then by episode 10, it's just like, we got these guys. And then Korra's pet dog and Tenzin's little children are farting on Equalists' heads and taking them out with no problem. And I get why they did that, but it hurts the threat of the Equalists. And only makes them on out to be, like, the only real credible threat, when they should always be credible threats. Because by season 2, or whenever they show up, there is an actual threat with them.
Okay. But we're going to start wrapping, because Trent's about to go bye-bye. Check out the website. This month, Trent, instead of doing Ask a Dork, is going to do horror movie reviews, and he won't tell me what he's doing, so we'll figure out it's out this week. She'll be exciting. I'm sure he has some Silent Hill films he wants to check out. I, along with my partner in crime, will be doing Trauma Team releases, starting off this week with Poultry Geist, Night of the Living Chicken, which everybody's always invited to come. It's on Netflix and Epic and some other streaming services, so it's out there if you want to see it. We have that up there. We have introduction. We'll have comic book reviews up. I think we're doing American Vampire. We're doing, I think, Swamp Thing. We're doing Lock and Key. So there's a couple of those going up as well this month. We'll have a ton of, Halloween's like my favorite time of the year, so we'll have a bunch of stuff up. I'm not promising anything daily because that's really just hard to find. I don't watch enough horror movies to do anything like that, and I don't horror TV specials aren't that special anymore. It's usually just people dressing up for like 5 minutes and calling it a day. Yeah, check. We're starting our Game of the Generation countdown on the website. This week we're going to talk about best new franchises of the generation. So look forward to that on Do Well Then, as well as the website where we'll have a top 7 list to check out. Yeah, so I want to thank Mr. Esquire.
It's always a pleasure.
Justin, Trent, and myself. This has been Nerds on the Rocks episode 146.
Bye.
Peace! Oh boy.
Oh, that was loud.
Every time I build a robot, every time I sink a ship, every time I throw a girl off of a big old building or abandoned bridge, it seems you're always there to stop me. I've had enough, I'm sick of it. No more scheming, no more stealing, I think I'm done with all of this. So I took my death ray and put it on the shelf. Your punches to my face were bad for my health. By the means of act of loud, so the atomic sun now sleeps with the crabs. So have fun, cause I'm done and I'm done. The legal evil said I miss ya. Guild of Demons tried to call. Dr. Hatred told me I was the one that had influenced them all. But I would not return the message. Still they couldn't take a hint. No more planning, no conniving. I said I'm done with all of this. So I took my death ray and put it on the shelf. Cause I found your punches to my face. Atomic sum now sleeps with the crabs. So have fun, cause I'm done and I'm done. Sitting on the beach, sipping drinks all night and day, watching girls in bikinis, eating crunch berries and Frito-Lays, until I saw you on the TV, stupid smile all big and bright, the old fire started again burning, found me itching for a fight, and kicking sand into some kid's face, I found my way back home because I'm on the shelf, cause it turns out sick.